back with episode 488 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I hope one day to also have backseat privileges.
And I am Bronson from Australia, and someday I hope to be homeless and yet somehow the most made-up person in an entire city.
Yeah. Indeed. All right, well, we are going to be joined eventually by Mr. Gary from Jacksonville, from what I understand, but we're going to forge on ahead with the trio that we have currently. It's always good to have Bronstone back from his many travels and incredibly productive travels, I should say, but I'll let that kind of...
I like how me going on travels is our place momentarily.
Yes. Yes, we're also going to blame anything that Google Hangout does in terms of weird audio glitches on you and your travels. I don't know. You're like on some kind of weird quest. I don't know. Anyway, we are going to be doing some news before we get into our normal episodic discussion. But Edmund, first, I think there's something that you need to do.
Absolutely.
And it's probably not help Bronson with his itinerary.
I wish I could, but all I can do for now is, as ever, warn everyone that our policy is to talk about anything that might have happened in the news, in the episodes we discuss, so you will be nastily, horribly spoiled if you haven't seen them yet, but we always give you a week or so to catch up.
That's right, and again, sorry, we're probably on the event horizon of some kind of invisible black hole causing all kinds of time distortion. Either that or the TARDIS is about to land on one of us, so please just forgive the weirdness of Google tonight. Anyway, we're going to go ahead and jump into a few news articles here, as we're going to change things up a little bit. I know that the news part gets a little long, so we're actually going to do a few each show, which means that we'll be spreading it out a little bit. Being the very first one here, it's actually probably good that Gary's not here for this one. I think that he might have a fit. Here we go. It's just everything's working out wonderfully here. I can't seem to get my browser to work. Come on. All right. Come on now. One of these days it'll show up. It has something to do with Carlton Cuse and a USA Network pilot. And Carlton Cuse was, of course, one of the showrunners for Lost. So it's of interest to us. At any rate, he's back and he's working with Josh Holloway from Lost as well on a USA Network pilot called Colony. Of interest to us, not just because of the showrunner or the executive producer or the cast, but rather also that it is about a former FBI agent living in L.A. when the city is occupied by an alien regime. Yes, so Will is forced to work with the occupying government.
Okay, so it's nonfiction.
Yeah, exactly. He's forced to work with the occupying government to thwart a growing resistance movement. So it's kind of the opposite of what we're used to.
Hang on, he's a bad guy? Or are they good aliens?
They might be. Who knows?
Yeah.
He may be a collaborator. He may be an infiltrator. Who can say? That's what it says he's forced to work that way. So one would imagine that his family being mentioned also has something to do with that. But yeah, it's an interesting spin just in this little blurb that we get here from the normal thing where the lead character is the one leading the resistance. So hopefully this will not be the latest version of V because... Falling Skies has already tried to redo V, and it didn't work any better for them. So, yeah.
Maybe
it might be. Edmund, why don't you take the next one, if you don't mind?
Certainly. And actually, this is one where probably having Gary around could have been interesting, but this is, we have mentioned in a previous show that there is going to be an Arrow Flash crossover episode, which of course was originally what the backdoor pilot was supposed to be before it got, it was so good that they decided to put it on its own, but it's going to be a two-night crossover event, and the Arrow half is an episode that will be titled The Brave and the Bold. Which, especially given the fact that the writer's room at Arrow obviously is very knowledgeable about the comic universe they are in, it will be very interesting to see if this is tongue-in-cheek or if they really are going to try and sneak some Batman or references to Batman into the Arrowverse.
Well, it wouldn't be the first time, and of course, again, two of the main writers for the show actually wrote for DC. So I'm sure that they are more than well aware of what they're doing with that one. All right, Bronstum, if you don't mind, the next one.
Sure thing. X-Men Apocalypse, the next film in the the X-Men franchise, could include Psylocke, Cable, and Scarlet Witch. Or so was revealed by Simon Kinberg, the screenwriter of X-Men Days of Future Past, in a Q&A session via Yahoo. Apparently Psylocke was considered for inclusion in Days of Future Past, but may yet appear in Apocalypse. Kinberg went to say that Psylocke is a fan favorite and a particular favorite of the writers, has a cool power, and that they want to get in. If they can help it. Scarlet Witch almost got a mention in Days of Future Past, in all the Quicksilver stuff. So again, that's a logical one to bring in if they do bring back Quicksilver. And Cable, apparently, like Psylocke, was also considered for Days of Future Past. But then again, I suppose at this point, pretty much everyone was considered for Days of Future Past. at this point, I haven't heard they've got an actual script yet. So this is all just actors, writers and directors and whatnot bouncing ideas off the walls, but for X-Men fans and fans of the films, it sounds like a good get.
Yeah, my concern is always with this particular franchise is that they're going to overload the movies with too many characters, but as we saw last time when the list of characters appearing in Days of Future Past was something like 30 at one point, and everyone was freaking out, it worked well enough, so... We shall see. All right, moving on to the next one here. This one was particularly interesting to me. I must have missed something, but I really wish that Gary was here to talk about this one. I may have to bring this up when he actually is able to join us. But there is apparently a fan-made web series.
Your wish has been granted.
Well, yay, look at that. Wow. Speak of the devil and he shall appear. So what we've got here is this news item that I'm wondering what you may know about this, because as soon as I saw it, my interest was piqued, but the fan-made web series for Nightwing. I guess there's a YouTube fan series that is out there, and this episode has Nightwing, of course, up against Deathstroke. And just looking at the screenshot here on the article, it looks pretty impressive. So I'm definitely going to have to track that down. Do you know anything more about this, Gary, or is this the first you're hearing of it, too?
No, I haven't watched the series, but I heard some talk about it, and I'm not trying. I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse, but I don't know how many episodes they've actually made of this. As to my knowledge, there's only one existing. So while they say series, I don't know if it's a one-off or how far they'll go. And anytime you see a fan production, as much as I like to encourage them, the follow-through is often spotty and often drops off after a few episodes. So we'll see how this turns out.
It says here in the article that the second episode will be released on the 6th. So actually, when this goes out, the second one will be pretty much available at the same time.
Well, that's good. I hope it makes it past, makes it over that, the first two or three hump. So it could keep going. Although DC has been rather authoritarian with ongoing series, most don't really make it that far, so I'll be curious to see if they actually try to stop it as well.
Yeah, that's true. That was kind of one of the things that I had in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of fake movie trailers and stuff, and those they'll kind of let go by the wayside, but anything ongoing, they usually stifle.
It's still of interest, though. Let's see. That being the case, if you don't mind taking the next one.
Sure.
The up-to-date.
Yes, I do. I am as current as I can be. We're talking about a little bit of Marvel movie news, as if they weren't doing well enough already. Guardians of the Galaxy has, out-earned Iron Man to become the third highest grossing release from them. And it's not surprising. I mean, the movie's been getting nothing but positive marks for months at this point. The soundtracks are going good. I even heard they're bringing the soundtrack to vinyl. So that just shows the type of interest that this franchise has brought for Marvel. They already, and of course announced the sequel. It's due in 2017. So we're looking forward to it. And I know, like you, I'm curious what's on the second mixtape too, beyond the first song. So we will have to wait a few more years to come out. But if we want to actually just mention actual real numbers for a minute, they've brought in over $319 million on that movie so far.
Wow.
And that's just domestic.
Wow.
Yeah, that's impressive, all right.
So, yeah, quite, you know, they're kind of glad they made the movie. So, but yeah, no, that's good. And, you know, it does us good too, because it shows Hollywood that some, you know, that these movies continue to be a draw from, the regular people, if you want to call them that, without meaning disrespect, but it shows that, you know, the average person wants to see these shows too, and they're glad to go out and watch them and spend lots of ticket money on them. So that means we will get more. So I just hope the quality stays up. Sometimes when a theme gets sort of latched onto by Hollywood, they pump out so much of it that it sort of waters it down. And I hope this won't be the case. As I've said for a lot of shows now, there is such a ton of material for them to literally pick from that they definitely can pick all good stuff for several years and be perfectly fine. So,
all right, let's see. The last thing that we're going to talk about here in this episode is Manu Bennett talking about the possibility of Deathstroke returning on Arrow. I think everybody knows I would be most interested in hearing about that. Yes. But apparently I'm somewhat stymied, because while the producers definitely want to find a way to get him out of purgatory, narratively and literally, as far as the story is concerned, they haven't actually given him a timetable or anything else along those lines. So
he had mentioned the same thing at Dragon Con during one of his panels, that, yeah, he would love to go back, but there was nothing scheduled. So I'm assuming it's more of the same report.
I'm hoping that it's just, you know, typical caginess where, yep, nothing to report now.
Yeah.
What's up, everybody? Jimmy here with IGN.
Warner Brothers
is apparently ready to reboot I Am Legend once again.
Can get on that, so.
Yeah. So we were having a little bit of wonkiness yet again from our friends at Google, so yay. At any rate, we are going to move on from the news right now and instead get into our episodic content. So before we do that, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with our usual fun. So stay tuned.
John, I was sitting past my computer from 9:30, but I never got the pop-up about the thing. I was like, what the?
Yeah, that happens. Google's been having lots of fun with us tonight. Yes. All right, let's see. Well, Bronze Thumb, since we have the pleasure of your company tonight, why don't you go ahead and give us our first topic?
Actually, I've seen a decent amount of the things on the list, which is nice and rare, but let's say we get stuck into some Doctor Who.
All right, let's go ahead and do that. And in your absence, we've certainly had a lot of varying opinions, so this should be a good, lively conversation. Let's go ahead and run the promo.
You okay?
Yeah, of course I'm okay. Why haven't I been okay?
I don't know. Every time I see you, it's like you're...
What?
In a rush, in a state.
How's you? Sorry I'm late.
Who are you having dinner with?
I can't keep doing this. I can't do it. The next few days are all about you. I promise.
I'm the new caretaker, John Smith.
Welcome to Colville, Mr. Smith.
Thanks.
Problem. Solution. Destroy.
And if you could do the recap, please.
I think I could probably manage that. Doctor Who Series 8, Episode 6, The Caretaker. The terrifying Skovox Blitzer prepares to destroy mankind. Meanwhile, Danny Pink and the Doctor are on a course to meet.
Yes, that's certainly one way of putting it. All right, so what would you give this episode?
I'd give this one an 8.
All right. And Gary, how about you?
I'll give it an E, too. I really enjoyed the Dr. Pink story, or Mr. Pink.
And Edmund?
I'll make it 3/8.
All right. And I gave this one an 8.5, so we're all fairly consistent here. Bronstone, what was the highlight for you? I think Gary already kind of alluded in his grading what he thought was a highlight for him, but how about you?
The highlight for me was how what seemed like was going to be a relatively rompy sort of adventure that maybe borrowed a little bit from things like The Lodger and Closing Time and whatnot, and just that concept of the Doctor has to hang around and pretend to be relatively normal, how they brought some depth to it and some character stuff and furthered the dynamics between the Doctor and Clara and Danny and Clara and continue to reinforce this idea of Clara as the real protagonist of this season, which I've been really enjoying. It's a marked difference from what we saw in the half season of Clara and Matt Smith, because that whole one was really about putting us in the Doctor's perspective, and now we're back to a companion being more of the focus, their viewpoint being more of the focus. It allows the Doctor to look more alien, and it allows the companion to have a bit more dramatic storytelling to what they're doing, and yeah, I've really been enjoying that about the season, about Series 8, and I love how the stuff with Danny and the Doctor came to a head here with them sort of finally meeting and getting along exactly as well as you thought they wouldn't, so to speak.
Yeah,
finding a really interesting reason as to why, like, this was not just a retread of Rory or Mickey or anything like that. Like, this is, it's not just that it's a different Doctor. It's just like this is he might be in the same kind of position as characters like Rory or Mickey or anything like that, but he's really nothing. That's really it. Other than that, he's nothing like those other characters, and they really reinforce that, and I really dug it.
Yeah, there's a lot of commentary out there about people having a bit of an objection to how strongly the Doctor is objecting to Danny being a soldier, or at least a former soldier. It doesn't seem to matter to him in either case. And they feel like that's somehow out of character for the Doctor himself. In which case, a lot of classic fans, mumble under their breath, 3/5. But at any rate,
exactly.
Well, there's a key difference between, because yes, he has had soldiers as, people who were soldiery, who were, if not part of the TARDIS team, then part of the UNIT team or something like that. The big difference, though, is that was before the Time War.
Exactly.
The Doctor went and became a soldier, or more importantly, as Danny really points out, he became an officer. And the thing that the reference that kind of threw me back to was if you ever watched or read the Bernard Cornwell's Sharp books or seen the movies that have Sean Bean in them, there's one character who points out that there's two kinds of officers. There's your killing officers and your murdering officers. And the killing officers are the ones who'll get you killed by accident. They'll mean the best. And then the murdering officers are the ones who'll send you to your death deliberately. And you get the sense that that quote came to mind, and I got the sense that the reason Danny's take such a hard line to the Doctor when he first meets him. It's not just that he's an officer, it's that the Doctor was probably a bit of a murdering officer. And the Danny being a soldier is just like, the Doctor really represents something that he objects to in so many different ways. Like, he represents probably some of the worst aspects of what his time in the service was.
Yeah, it's taking all of his dislike for the military that he had in previous incarnations, and now that he's had to be on the side that had to run a war and survive a war and make that sacrifice, he's gone through that cycle of grief with his previous incarnations, and now he can't hide from it anymore. And this is his reaction, at least partially, to that. At least I feel. And it was just some strong interaction and dynamic between those two. I really liked it, and I'm looking forward to them doing more of it. Not to mention the fact that we have an episode that, in a very classic sense, you've got three different lead characters in the story, and the title refers to all of them. You know, Clara is the Doctor's caretaker. You know, as she said, if she wasn't there, he'd have to grow his own conscience. Mm-hmm. Danny sees himself as Clara's caretaker, whether she really embraces that entirely or not. And then you've got the Doctor feeling himself as the caretaker of humanity, of Earth, of really everybody. And it's the interactions of not just of the characters, but also how they perceive themselves in relation to each other in this caretaking role, in how the tensions play out there, that drives the episode. And that's what I thought was really quite good about it, that the characters were true to themselves, yet there was a feeling of progress for the overall season dynamic as well. Edmund, before we get back to Gary and letting him kind of expound a little bit more on what he said at the very start, what did you want to add to this?
Yeah, no, well, certainly this felt very, very much like the sort of coming out party for the Danny Pink character. I mean, we've in the build up, we've had him sort of being a little bumbling and fumbling, and it was nice for them to get past that, and both in terms of the relationship with Clara and then introducing, as you guys have gone over very well, this very strong reaction to the Doctor and an analogy that I certainly found it surprising when it first came up. But it did feel completely apt and made sense given what both of them have been through, it was interesting having that strong a personal element and them really working on those relationships and bringing them to the fore in the course of an episode that as Bronze Thumb said, could have appeared to be just a standard lost monster of the week who the Doctor has to dispatch. And but if anything, I really like the way that the conflict's being brought to a head, precisely because Danny was getting suspicious and trying to figure out what was going on, and that causing the whole meddling with the vortex, so that it only went ahead 3 days instead of where it was supposed to, and also I really liked the way they for once had somebody discovering the Doctor and having it all thrown at them all at once and having to process it and accept it in that very short period of time, and I thought they did that very well.
So, Gary, you keyed in on a lot of the same things that everybody else has enjoyed about this episode. What would you like to add to the whole Danny-Doctor interaction here?
Well, I wanted to start off by saying I enjoyed the – I'll refer to them as courting scenes with Clara and Danny. The whole, the back and forth between him and her time with the Doctor in the beginning, I thought those were a great bunch of scenes that they put together for that. You know, they were light and humorous, and she wasn't flustered or – she was just handling both – the real world and the Doctor world with, in stride. And I thought that was nice. Often it seems like Companion is so preoccupied by the Doctor that they seem to lose touch with the real world. And Clara wasn't happening in this case. Also, I also enjoyed that, Danny figured it out. He's like, I am not stupid. I know something's going on. And I, we don't typically get that. They might get it, revealed, but never quite figuring it out on their own so much. So I enjoyed that as well. Also, I've been up and down this season with the Capaldi's portrayal of the Doctor. It hasn't seemed consistent for me. I think this is now maybe the second or third time that I feel we've seen this version of Capaldi's Doctor, and this is the one that is starting to grow on me. So I'm hoping that keeps up as well.
Yeah, and for me, I've felt maybe that they needed to find the footing with how they were going to write the Doctor, but this is the way I like him. There's a good balance between his kind of oblivious side and amusing side, but they don't go overboard with it like they have in a couple other episodes. Anything else, Bronston, that you wanted to add for this episode?
Well, just at the you were saying that you don't think the Doctor's been super consistent this series. I don't think he's been super inconsistent, but one of the things is that a lot of these scripts would have been written before the casting of Capaldi, before the writers knew who was going to be playing the Doctor or what personality. A screenwriter on a previous episode, I think it might have been Robot of Sherwood, but I'd have to go back and double check where I read this. But since they didn't know what kind of Doctor they'd be going, they just wrote it for Tom Baker, essentially, and trusted that it would
sense.
Be. I don't know if it was that particular episode, but that's the one that's jumping to mind. But yeah, they wrote that one, assuming just for the hell of it, just wrote it for Tom Baker, and I think that's part of the reason why Stephen Moffat's name has been on so many of the scripts this season, is that he's kind of coming in after the fact to make it a bit more Capaldi. But I've been loving Capaldi. I love that. I love the crustiness. I love the I'm old and Scottish, so I can be as angry as I like. Sort of attitude. And I love the dynamic between him and Clara, and it's just been a ball. I love the fact that he's even grumpier when it's a rompy adventure than when it's something, you know, compared to the more dark and serious ones. I've been really enjoying this series.
Edmund, what do you want to add to this?
Yeah, well, just on the subject of Capaldi, I also liked just the way they were playing with the something that I feel they've gotten away from. Oh, good. There we go. Something that I think they've gotten away from in some of the more recent Doctors, but his being slightly clueless and oblivious about human relations, the whole thing of getting the boyfriend wrong or making assumptions, and I thought Capaldi did that rather well as a nice little bit of humor to contrast with the grumpiness.
Mm. All right. Anything else from you, Gary, before we move on to the next topic?
I did enjoy that he used the name John Smith again. It was a nice throwback to Doctor history.
But yes. Yes, very true. All right, so Gary, actually, why don't you go ahead and give us our next topic?
I'd like to switch over to to Haven.
Okay, let's go ahead then and run the promo.
Audrey is gone.
Nathan.
You talked to me.
I'm going to give you a trouble that makes your heart explode inside of your chest.
I've been looking for you. You have no idea what you've done.
What the hell's going on here?
Welcome to the party.
Haven. All new this Thursday at 8. Only on Sci-Fi.
And if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We're talking about Haven, Season 5, Episode 3, Spotlight. Nathan makes a desperate play to protect Mara from the angry citizens of Haven, leaving Dwight and Duke on their own deal to deal with troubles that threaten to burn down the whole town.
Yes, indeed. And what would you give this one, do you think?
I would give this one a 7.
Okay. And Bronstam, are you up on this one?
Yes, I am.
And what would you give this episode?
I give this one a 6.
And I split the difference with a 6.5. All right. Well, yes, kind of unfortunately very consistent for our opinions of this season so far. But Bronstam, you haven't had a real chance to weigh in on Haven this season. What do you think earned this episode a 6, so below average for us? And is that kind of where you feel this season has been since the beginning?
No, I actually enjoyed the first two episodes. I thought it was a good return. It set up a good premise for season 5, and I was impressed that they didn't just immediately reverse the Marification. And then this episode was just, you had two storylines going on, and one of them was, I thought, a fairly lackluster Trouble, and the other one was, it was Nathan trying to play house with someone who is not his girlfriend in the hope that she would magically become his girlfriend. And I'm not sure if I was pleased or upset that it kind of worked every now and then, because it was just, it was not, if it wasn't for the fact that Mara, you know, would just be snarky as hell with him every now and then, it would have been a complete, it probably would have been an even lower grade. Yeah, I just thought this was an episode that was, it was an ad breaks worth of story stretched out to a whole episode. Honestly, the most interesting thing going on was the idea of how Dwight is dealing with sort of, you know, now being in charge of the guard, which I thought was a great development from the first two episodes, and I liked seeing how they were developing that. But everything else about the episode I thought was just kind of dull and lackluster, and
yeah,
they were spending way too much time on it.
Yeah, that's pretty much where I was coming from with my grade. And I have to say, I think I actually said this more in the review for the subsequent episode, but it really doesn't matter. It applies here too. It's almost like the writers had a plan for a 13-episode season, and then when they got an order for a 26-episode season, they said, hey, that's twice as much. We'll just take our plan for 13 episodes and stretch it over 26 episodes. It's because it literally feels like there's enough material for an episode every two episodes right now. And this felt like the first act or two of a story strung out over an entire episode, and it was excruciatingly slow. Like you said, if it wasn't for some of the snark here and there and maybe a few character beats, it would have gotten a much lower grade. It just felt like it was dragging the entire way through. I just really had a hard time keeping interest in it. I mean, it wasn't, you know, bedlam terrible by any means, but it was still not what I'm used to from this show. The pacing is off. They're stringing things out way too long. And yeah, all of this could have been covered in a single act. There was, and the Trouble just was not at all interesting. It was like bad Warehouse 13 episode grade Trouble, which, yeah, did not help. Gary, I'm trying to save your voice a little bit here because I can tell that you're under the weather as much as Bronstum is, perhaps. But what about you? You were a little bit more favorable to it.
Well, I thought it was imaginative, at least, to change the Trouble from light to microwaves. It was, you know.
That's not this one.
Oh, geez, I'm on the wrong one.
Yeah.
Oh, I will. Let's see. This is. I've seen the other one too. Give me.
Yep.
Oh, this was with Mara and the.
And Nathan just hanging out in the cabin the whole time.
Because he's convinced that Audrey is in there somewhere.
And not the fun kind of cabin in the woods with killer unicorns.
Well, hey, if it were Nathan and Audrey, I'm sure they would have a lot more fun in the cabin in the woods too, in a very different way. But well, Gary, now that you're thinking of a different episode, do you want to revise your grade at all?
Yes, I will drop it down to the six that Bronstum did.
Yes,
that one was much worse. I agree with you. It seems like they're really trying to stretch things out, and this whole sort of Mara storyline trapped. What is she going to do? How can we stop her? Is, I think, almost in our third episode now, pretty much, of nothing happening as a result of that. At least nothing significant, in my opinion. So I'm sort of disappointed that they chose to do, I can't even call them filler episodes, because they just as you said, they're stretching out one episode into about three, in my opinion. So I'm disappointed. And, you know, it's reflecting in our ratings as well that, you know, they had started to do some tighter storylines and now, you know, it's opening up again and not in a good way. I'm not sure what their thought is behind Mara. We know she's evil, manipulative, and it seems like they want to just keep driving these points back to us. And, you know, and she monkeys with the troubles. But we've seen that. We've seen it again. And now we've seen it again. And it's just move on. But they don't seem to want to do that for some reason. And I concur that it's the stretching point of view. You know, there are some things like the brothers are developing and we're starting to see even, you know, how the guard is reaching the end of their patience. Well, I think their patience is pretty much ended as well, and they want to deal with her as well. So I guess we are building in that sense on a few different fronts. But again, it's like 5 miles an hour instead of the usual 50 we're used to.
Yeah, right now it's trending right back to the average score for the first season, which the biggest thing about Haven was how much it just leapt in quality between the first season and the second season. And that was really the thing that saved it from our perspective, because while the first season was a show that had potential, it actually started to meet it. Now it's kind of slipping back into that really rough mode that it started at. And I don't know if it's because they've got more room to maneuver, if there's some kind of turnover in the background we're unaware of, but it has not been on top of its game. So, yeah, obviously, you know, we've seen a little bit more, and that has certainly informed my opinion about it. But we'll have to check back in an episode or two and see again if maybe this is just a rough start that based on things that we're not quite aware of yet. But we'll see. We'll see. All right. Edmund, it's your turn now to pick a topic.
Well, let's see. Talking about first seasons of Haven, why don't we take a look at that second episode of Gotham?
All right, and here's the promo.
What the hell happened to you anyhow?
It was my own fault, but I'll be back, stronger and smarter than ever.
Did anyone ever tell you, when you walk, you look just like a penguin?
No, nobody's ever told me that.
The boy respects you. Trust him.
Bruce, you're hurting yourself.
I'm testing myself. This is Gotham. You don't bend, you'll get broke.
I'm gonna do what's right. So righteous. Not long since you put a man in the river.
You're just a little sinner like the rest of us.
And if you could please, Edmund.
Absolutely. This is Gotham Season 1, Episode 2, Selina Kyle. A child trafficking ring is investigated, and one of the victims is Selina Kyle. Elsewhere, Penguin blazes a bloody trail back to Gotham.
All right, and well, this should be interesting. What would you give this one?
I will give this a 7.
All right, and Gary, how about you?
6.5.
All right, Brunstone?
I tried to give it a 5, and apparently, someone took.
Wow, that's okay, and I gave it. Henry rather gave it a 6. The readers over at vognetwork.com gave it a 7.5, so I'll need to do a little bit of math there, but I would give it a 6.5 as well. The one high grade around an 8.5 over on vognetwork.com that Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio gave it, it was labeled as a dissenting opinion. And I would say that on the whole, that's exactly what it represents, because we all kind of felt that it was not up to snuff. And in fact, when I look at the average here, it dropped down dramatically from the first episode. So, Edmund, I mean, just what you were probably – you only dropped down a point.
Yeah.
There are some who dropped down two. So you're probably giving it the most grace here.
Yeah, I guess it's I guess I was giving it a little bit of benefit of the doubt. The fact that they were actually calling back to the Selina Kyle witnessing the Wayne murder at the very end there, I think was maybe the little hook that dragged me up that extra half point than you and Gary. But certainly compared to the debut, it didn't feel quite so cohesive. I mean, there's some of the stuff with Bruce and Alfred right at the beginning felt a little off for what we're used to, but thinking about it, I mean, I think it has been rare for us to actually see their interaction sort of so soon after the murder, as Alfred's trying to figure out how to take on this role as guardian. The stuff with Penguin, I think what I've been finding a little bit strange with that is sort of him sort of going so immediately to psycho killer mode, and when my thought about this series was it was actually going to show these actually some of the development more. I personally, the actual police dynamic, I think, is what I'm still enjoying most. I mean, with Donald Logue and the young Mr. Gordon. Even though there as well. I mean, that's, you know, it is this sort of oddity that we're getting kind of some conventional corrupt cop procedural stuff in the Batman prequel series. So yeah, I guess sort of I'm somewhat damning with faint praise there, but you guys obviously thought even less of it than that. So why don't somebody else weigh in?
Well, yeah, I mean the other side of this was the 5 that Brunslum you gave it. Yeah, that's significantly below what we consider average.
A lot of the things I didn't like about the first episode, just the idea that what Gotham is going to be going forward is a less than totally interesting police procedural mixed with all these references and name drops and stuff like that to things from the Batman mythos that can never really pay off just by design, just because of the way the show is put together. On top of the fact that apparently a lot of it's also going to have to do with Bruce Wayne's emo years.
Yeah, I think when we talked about the pilot, I know that you weren't in the discussion, but one of the things that we pointed out was that was it a positive thing to have Bruce Wayne in it at all past the pilot? Because, yeah, you can kind of see that as the kicking off point, but every single time that you bring the kid in, it's a reminder that he's not growing yet towards becoming Batman. He's, like you said, he's in his emo stage, and it just reminds us of all the things that we wish that it could be, which is kind of like a TV prequel to Batman's Rise, which it's not going to be. It's going to be Gordon coping with Batman's villains as they rise in prominence before Batman comes onto the scene. And I think that we all kind of circled around the fact that we were concerned that it would become a lot like this episode, which is a bit lost in its own premise. Like, where is it going to go from here? It doesn't really have a lot of direction.
I would be enjoying Gotham like a lot more at this point if it wasn't Gotham. Like, if you had, for the most part, a lot of the same premise and a lot of the same, you know, characters, or at least character archetypes and whatnot, but it wasn't supposed to be the Batman universe. Like, if you had a show that was about a super corrupt city and, you know, corrupt cops and a cop among them who's, like, doing okay. Like, something that could be, like, this, you know, hyper-real comic-esque sort of, like, you know, crime epic without having to be beholden to the mythos of Batman, then you'd have something to go on. Then you could start to essentially build your own story. But instead, they're going to be beholden to the Batman mythos the whole way through. It's, I will apologize to Gary in advance before making this comparison. This is like making Lost, but starting at the beginning of where all the flashbacks start. Like, it's the the start of the story of Batman is not when his parents die. Like, that's important, and that's built stuff like that, but the story of Batman begins with, really, him becoming Batman. And this show is, like, kind of trying to make the argument that no, it's not, but I think it's kind of failing at that, because there's just this big, long period of time between when his parents die and when he actually decides to be Batman, where, sure, things happen that inform him becoming Batman and the things that he'll do later and stuff like that, but all of which is not as... It's things that feed into the story rather than being part of the actual story, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we said was that the problem is that you want it to be about Batman, kind of, because it's the precursor to where he comes in afterward. But then that means that the only way to really do it is to have it be the story of Jim Gordon, which, okay, fair enough. The problem is that it's the story of Jim Gordon slowly but surely being incapable of stopping and stemming the tide of criminal rise in Gotham that necessitates the eventual coming of Batman. So you've got a show that's about a lead character that cannot win by
definition. Not that tragedy isn't a valid story choice, but they're not doing a particularly good job of it, I don't think.
No, because they really, that's where I mean, they don't seem to have a clear sense of direction on how they're going to do that and even give him, you know, some sense of at least periodic victory, that he's at least maintaining ground. I just don't know that they even know where they want the characters to go. So, Gary, what would you add to this? Because I wanted to give Bronstam a chance to at least kind of speak his mind on the two episodes we've seen so far, but you dropped this down 2 points. That's a pretty big jump for you.
Yeah, I'd like to start off by mentioning the one scene with the candles, very reminiscent in the comic book scene of when Robin is brought in and he's sort of swearing his allegiance, and I thought that was a nice touch. But the Alfred Bruce Wayne scenes are so awkward and makes so little sense to the ongoing storyline, or how Gordon is becoming a big brother / surrogate father. It does. It's not working for me at all. It's really clunky, and I think everybody sees it. More importantly, while I did enjoy the buildup of Penguin, I realized that he went right to suicidal, and I care for the character more when he's played as a crime boss versus a homicidal maniac. Nevertheless, he's on the run for his life, and it fits to enough of an extent that I buy it. The whole stealing of the children, I just thought it was a really poor storyline, unless you actually had Bruce Wayne get stolen. Then it might have made a little bit more sense to me. But given how he wasn't involved and Selina to some extent was, although she escaped and then ended up getting caught again, seemed a little bit rehashing of the same sort of kidnapping in the first place. But it just seemed like poor storyline after poor storyline for me, and that's what knocked it down.
See, right there, you just almost pitched a way better version of this episode where Bruce Wayne, you know, being of this mindset to be more rebellious and independent and stuff like that, actually goes out on the street, actually meets Selina Kyle, and she keeps him from, you know, getting killed horribly in the first 20 minutes and whatnot. And he does get, you know, captured with all these kids.
Yeah.
And Selina has to get Jim Gordon's help to get saved and stuff like that. You could set up why Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle sort of know each other for further down the line. It could set up why Selina Kyle and Jim Gordon would, you know, get in one another's orbit and stuff like that. And maybe the fact that she made friends with a tiny billionaire could explain why Selina Kyle is wearing more makeup than any other character in the show when she's on. Don't bother anyone else. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'll be quiet.
How about the fact that the episode is called Selina Kyle and she's probably in the episode less than emo Bruce Wayne? But anyway,
yeah, if I can watch the episode once and you know, talk with you guys about it, and we come up with a better version of the same story, mm-hmm. That's not good. Like, that doesn't say good things about your story. That's not a good comment on us. That's a bad comment on the show.
Well, and more to the point of a struggling first season show, for this to be the episode that the first episode of the series proper, Now, I understand, yes, this was a show that did not have to go from pilot to series. This was a series commitment right from the bat, from what I understand, no pun intended. But for it, the pilot still would have been the, you know, making the case. And the second episode is always the, this is what the show is going to look like type of situation. And if this is what the show is going to look like, it's a mess. I'm sorry. It is not at all what people were expecting out of this. And I think that's the problem, too, is that, again, when you invoke Gotham, when you invoke the Bruce Wayne mythology, and you can't divorce yourself from it enough at this early stage, you're setting up expectations that the show is just not designed to meet. And that's where I'm concerned, is that I think they've set themselves up for failure. I think that by not having the courage to really just step away from that framing moment of the Waynes being killed and not come back to Bruce Wayne, and just really stick to their guns on that, I think that's what's hurting them more than anything. Because the story that we're pitching, you know, so to speak, is all about Bruce Wayne. And the problem is that, yes, that is a better story. It's also a story that they absolutely 100% say they're not interested in telling. So that's where I think that they run into the biggest problem right now.
Yeah, he can't be a crime fighter. It's like the Smallville curse.
they can't even do that, because at least in Smallville, Clark could be a developing hero. He had his abilities. Right. Bruce Wayne doesn't have anything.
Well, I think they're going to reach a point where it's going to happen.
Mm. That wouldn't necessarily be a particularly good show either. But like, this, what they've got now isn't particularly good.
If they wind up, I think the problem is that they cannot do the Batman thing. And I think that they're limited in what they can do with Bruce Wayne because of this fragmented way that they do things with the DC properties in the various studios. And I think that's going to be their limiting factor. They're going to end up right. They've already written themselves into a corner. And I think that they're going to end up that this is going to be an example of why having the rights for different characters in different parts of your corporate world and not being able to share is going to hurt tremendously. If they would just let loose a little bit the reins over the Batman mythology and let the series have some of that, even if it's not exactly the same, come on. They've already basically said that they are more than happy to have a dozen different versions of their universe running at the same time. Let Gotham breathe.
You know, there's a bunch of different places that, you know, this is in a sense the first episode, and there was a lot of setup, for example, with the organized crime figures also saying that something needs to be done because even they realize the crime's getting out of control. You can still have, you know, Bruce Wayne get, you know, be in the middle of a situation, get kidnapped or something like that. At some point, Gordon's going to have to be somewhat successful because he gets made police commissioner over all these corrupt people. So I see where there will have to be certain successes and certain nods to the franchise a little bit more if they want the show to be successful.
Yeah, I'm just hoping, I guess, that they get a little bit more direction in the next several episodes in order to give them the room to breathe, because otherwise they're going to kind of really, they're in a worse shape even than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was at the beginning, because I feel like that show did know what it was trying to be. It just wasn't what people wanted it to be. This, I don't think they know what it needs to be yet. And that's kind of a fatal place to be. So we'll see. And I mean, we're going to keep with it, obviously, because this has potential. It's just, it's not there yet. It needs to grow. This probably could have used a formal pilot to series evolution so that they could kind of reassess and recondition the series between pilot and the first few episodes. Instead, we're seeing the shakedown take place as it goes, and that's a little, and it's a lot more rough in that regard. But any last thoughts here on Gotham? Edmund, I know you didn't get a lot of words edgewise in here.
No, but I mean, I do agree with most of the criticisms, and as Bronson alluded to, I mean, it's become one of my touchstones. Anytime I start rewriting the script, it's a sign that something's going wrong. And I did prefer some of the alternate plots you guys were coming up with. I was certainly thinking of Gary's point that Gordon does become police commissioner, so he. It's not going to be him just being completely ineffectual against the rising tide. And let's not forget that Arkham Asylum has pretty much a revolving door, so he can certainly put people away, and then they'll be back out again once Batman comes around.
Well,
so.
You know, that is another whole plot, that he could be the one that starts filling it up the first time, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good point. All right, well, we're going to go ahead and end it here for this show and pick up where we left off next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as Fair Use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.